Meanwhile, on the Eastern Front, Hitler's blitzkrieg slams to a halt at Stalingrad, stopped by the Russian winter, and a Red Army determined to defend every street. As the war enters its fourth year, the conflict becomes ever more brutal. Both sides try to break their enemies' spirits by carpet bombing civilian-filled cities. The Nazis also break the Geneva Convention. As a result, more than half of all Soviet prisoners of war die in German captivity. This issue covers the dramatic moments that turn the war in favor of the Allies, both on the Eastern Front and in the Pacific. Chapter 1: Allies slowed the Japanese advance. The U.S. Army deployed 19,000 Marines to recapture the Pacific island of Guadalcanal. Japan's progress in the Far East had to be stopped, and the Empire deprived of any opportunity to attack Australia. But when the Americans attempted to land on the small tropical island, a big surprise awaited them. Several hundred Marines stood along the starboard rail of the USS American Legion. The recent day's chatter about sweethearts and chasing girls had given way to an uneasy silence. The only sound came from the water slapping the sides of the ship. Through powerful binoculars, Colonel Leroy Hunt and his Marines contemplated the jagged black peaks, which were just visible as the day's first light hit the Pacific island of Guadalcanal. The men's hearts were thumping, yet, strangely, no shots came from the enemy's coastal batteries. At 0614, a shell finally broke the silence as a U.S. destroyer began bombing Japan's defensive positions. Soon, salvo after salvo was heading towards Guadalcanal, lighting up the beaches and providing a perfect beacon for a group of dauntless bombers to drop their loads. The aircraft had taken off from aircraft carriers still en route to Guadalcanal. The tropical island's beaches had been turned into a hellish landscape of deadly explosions. Aboard the Legion, engines were stopped, and creaking hoists lowered four landing craft into the water. Dawn broke as the first scramble net was dropped, and the Marines clambered into the boats. The laborious task lasted almost 2 hours, but by 0830, the sea was filled with small black landing craft bobbing up and down, while their crews impatiently awaited the signal to head for land. As Colonel Hunt scrambled down into one of the last boats, the veteran officer noted that none of the Allied ships had been hit. One Marine wondered out loud whether there were any Japanese on the island at all. Another suggested it was some kind of a trap. No one replied. In front of them lay an unknown island, an unknown landscape, and, above all, an unknown fate. U.S. was forced to attack. Guadalcanal had become a key square on the board when the Japanese landed there in May 1942. In itself, the almost uninhabited jungle island didn't have much value, but its location northeast of Australia made it useful. With an airbase, the Japanese could use it to cut the supply line between the US and Australia and allow the Empire to deploy bombers over Australia's east coast. So, when Japanese ships began unloading engineers and cutting down trees, the Allies were quick to investigate. On 3rd of July, an Australian spy confirmed that the Japanese were building an airbase on the island. In Washington, President Roosevelt and his military staff met with other Allied representatives. Their decision was clear. Guadalcanal had to be taken. The operation was given the codename Watchtower. Its instigators hoped that a successful mission at Guadalcanal might also help them neutralize or retake the big Japanese base in Rabaul on the island of New Britain. The U.S. was still riding a wave of optimism after its fleet had thwarted the enemy's large-scale attack against Midway in early June. And although the Americans had not yet completed a wartime amphibious operation, everyone was ready. Major General Alexander Vandegrift was appointed command of the 23 transport ships.